after a tremendous, shocking overtime victory over the Denver Broncos in Denver on primetime last week, the Kansas City Chiefs are at the peak of their season. But this week, they have a challenge like nothing they've seen since before the bye week. Welcome to the Ref and the Kicker Chiefs podcast on Blog Talk Radio and on ArrowheadAddict.com. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe, on Twitter at JBBriscoe. And tomorrow, recording this show on Saturday night, tomorrow, the Kansas City Chiefs are going to have a very unique challenge when they go to Atlanta to take on the Falcons. A challenge I think more dubious for this defense than any game since the blowout to the hands of the Pittsburgh Steelers. So I'm going to talk about what the defense has to do to stay in character because they've been fantastic since the bye week. But first off, I want to talk about what the offense needs to do to get out of the rut they've been in. Then we'll look around the AFC West, take your questions about this game, look at some key matchups, and figure out exactly what has to happen for the Chiefs to stay right in the top of the AFC West race. Either Andy Reid needs to let go, or he needs to hold on a little bit tighter. Of course, talking about the Kansas City Chiefs offense, Reid either needs to give more of the control away and acknowledge his own weaknesses, or he needs to take 100% control of this offense and be more aggressive. And be more aggressive all the time. I think the point where this gets so confusing and so frustrating for Chiefs fans is because of the way I just said he either needs to let go or needs to hold on tighter. We don't know which direction he needs to go in. That's the frustrating thing right now, for me at least, is we all know, very, very obviously, there's a major problem with the Chiefs' offense right now. It's simply not good enough. The bright spot is the Chiefs' defense has been incredible. But right now, the offense simply isn't good enough to win a Super Bowl. It's not good enough to win a playoff game most of the time, but it is good enough to go and win in Denver, to win back in Week 1 against San Diego, and to win six other times in between those two victories. It's not ruining the team right now, but it's certainly a hindrance, and certainly the weakest part of this team. The offense is good enough to have a nice regular season for the Chiefs. It's good enough for a wild card spot, but not for much more than that. And it's frustrating because I look at the Chiefs' offense and see plenty of places where they could be doing more, where they could be getting to that next level to get them to some levels of success in the playoffs. But Andy Reid hasn't gotten this Chiefs team there, frankly, in his entire tenure as the Chiefs head coach. But just focusing specifically on this season, this is not a rhetorical question. I want you to think of the answer to this. When has the Chiefs offense looked best this season? When are the high points in your memory? When do you remember looking at this Chiefs offense and going, oh man, this is what we've been waiting for. This is what we needed. This is where this Chiefs offense needs to be. For me, I have three distinct games where I saw this happen, and two of them, it was just a blip on the radar. The time they did it through the whole game was at Indy. It was against a bad defense against the Colts. They needed to outscore Andrew Luck, and they did. The whole game had a nice pacing about it. There was some pacing of the offense with the use of Spencer Ware in the run game, aggressiveness in the passing game, some of those small chunk plays we've been talking about for weeks on this show, where you're picking up 7 yards at a time, 12 yards at a time, even nice 4 and 5 yard plays to supplement it. That's the only time for me when I've seen this Chiefs offense look good for an entire game. Even then, it wasn't as aggressive as it's been whenever their back has been pressed up against the wall. Versus the Chargers at home, versus San Diego in Kansas City in Week 1, the Chiefs at the end of the game were in absolute desperation mode. Nothing to lose mode. The Chiefs were coming into the season as the favorite in the AFC West, playing the team favored to be last in the AFC West. They were at home. Losing that game would have made the rest of this season look a whole lot darker, especially with the start the Raiders have gotten out to. They needed to win that game. And so what happened whenever Andy Reid realized the dire situation that the Chiefs were in at that point? They started throwing the ball. They started being aggressive. They started moving the ball with a faster pace. They started putting the Chargers defense back on its heels. Whenever you are required to score in this Andy Reid offense, whenever Andy Reid realizes we have to move the ball or we're losing this game, there's a real sense of urgency to this offense. The other time that it's happened was last week in Denver against the Broncos in the fourth quarter. The Chiefs had 3 minutes or so to go 80 yards to get a touchdown and a two-point conversion. Something simply impossible. Simply impossible for the offense that we've seen for the majority of this Chiefs season. Simply impossible for the offense we saw through the first three quarters of the Broncos game. Just not a possibility. It would not have happened. So what do the Chiefs do? How do the Chiefs win that game? They brought out a different offense. They brought out an urgent offense, an offense that had to move the ball, a time when Andy Reid had to trust Alex Smith and say, listen, man, at this point, if you make a mistake, then we just lose. If we don't try anything big enough, that's our mistake and we lose anyway. So Andy Reid let go. Or this is where the or of the opening statement comes in. Andy Reid either let go and said, all right, Alex, try to make some plays, or Andy Reid said, all right, Alex, no funny business. You listen to exactly what I'm telling you. We're going to be more aggressive, and I am going to calculate every step along the way here, and we are going to push the ball. Don't doubt me. Just push the ball because we have to now. And we don't know which one it was, but something changed with Alex Smith and Andy Reid. And again, I think they're one unit at this point. But either, but one of them is holding the other one back somewhere. It's either Andy Reid holding back Alex Smith's willingness to make some big plays or to take a shot on some bigger plays or to at least try to move with a little bit of a picked up pace, or it's Alex Smith holding Andy Reid back by being unwilling to do that. The reason I say that now is because we've seen it. We've seen this offense pick up the pace and then make good things happen. I tend to think still that it's Andy Reid doing the holding back, because Andy Reid was successful with Donovan McNabb. Donovan McNabb would, I think, color outside the lines and make his own plays. In this case, with the Chiefs specifically, whatever it is, and again, I tend to think that it's Andy Reid holding on too tightly, and he needs to let go a little bit and say, all right, bleep it, what do we have to lose? Go ahead, pick up the pace. He has to allow that to happen more. There is not a universe where the Chiefs are scoring 19 points against the Jaguars or 17 against the Buccaneers or 20 against the Panthers. There is not a universe where that style of offense is going to get the Chiefs playoff wins. Not meaningful ones. Maybe you go win in Houston again. We've been there now as Chiefs fans. We've seen that happen. The Chiefs did that already. Now it's time for, if not a first-round bye, it's time to have a first-round home game, or it's time to win two games on the road, whatever it may take to get to a second-round victory. That's what this Chiefs team is, and that's what we were talking about in the preseason. And the reason we're talking about it in the preseason is because we said, well, the offense, Andy Reid has built his offense for 3 years now. Andy Reid can do enough. He can do enough to make this offense cover up for the weaknesses that the defense will show. And the opposite has been true, obviously. The defense is covering up so many holes for this offense. And the offense has to pick up its side of the bargain now. It just cannot continue on this way. And I think we should be encouraged, as we're being discouraged as Chiefs fans right now, we should be encouraged by the fact that we've seen it happen. We've seen a faster-paced offense work. We saw it work in Week 1. We saw it work last week. We've seen it work a couple of times in the middle. With a little bit more aggressiveness against the Saints and the Raiders, got the Chiefs to some places. There was some aggressiveness against the Colts. Really looked like Andy Reid was just playing jazz on the sideline as he was calling plays. We've seen it work. The part where I start getting discouraged by it is whenever I realize, oh, we've seen it work, and Andy Reid still doesn't embrace it more often. We've seen it work. And Andy Reid is still convinced that his way is better, even when his way means 19 points against the Jags. And the Chiefs' offense has been doing this poorly, with most of the time good field position. Ryan Fitzpatrick threw 47 interceptions in Week 3. So the Chiefs scored 24 points. But because of the defense, the Chiefs beat the Panthers, ended up with 20 points against the Panthers because of the defense. The Chiefs stayed blow for blow with the Broncos because of the defense until the end, when the Chiefs' offense picked up their end of the bargain. If the Chiefs' offense could look like it did at the end of the Broncos game all the time, or even like it did at the Colts all the time, then this is a Super Bowl contending team. No parsing of words there. Because this is certainly a defense good enough to win a playoff game with an average offensive performance. I believe that. A first-round playoff game, the Chiefs are going to be favored in against anybody but the Steelers, maybe, especially if it's in Kansas City. The Chiefs could be favored against anybody if the offense looks average. Because we're about to get our first taste of what it looks like when Dee Ford and Justin Houston are on the field at the same time in 2016, the 2016 version of those two guys. And I think it could be really, really fun and really dangerous for opposing offenses. So if that's true, this defense can win a playoff game against an inferior team. But they can't beat a superior team. They can't beat the Patriots with or without Rob Gronkowski, which I'll talk about a little bit later on. They can't beat the Patriots with the offense we've seen for the majority of the Broncos game. Andy Reid and Alex Smith, however that relationship is working right now, whichever one is holding on to the reins too tightly, whichever one is holding on too loosely, they have got to get on the same page with this entire offense and get back into that pacing they had at the end of the Broncos game, throughout the whole Colts game, the end of the Chargers game. That pacing must return. And against the Broncos at Denver was the first time without Jeremy Maclin that the Chiefs had done it successfully. And we'll talk about it here in just a second. Maclin is out again against the Falcons before having to deal with the Raiders at home on Thursday night next week. The Chiefs offense is in a little bit of trouble. It's in a lot of trouble depending on what time of the game you look at it. I just want to believe in the fast-paced version of this offense, the fast-paced version of this team. I just want to believe that that's a real thing. I just want to believe that that's something this team is actually capable of. And right now, I really do. I really do think that this offense has that in them. But if it's going to take dire, desperate situations for Andy Reid and Alex Smith to try to bring it out, the Chiefs aren't going to go very far. If they can embrace that quicker pace, that no huddle, that a little bit, that just that twinge of extra aggressiveness, then the Chiefs are a real contender. If they don't, they're not. If you love this show as much as some people do, you might want to say, hey, how can I make sure that this show keeps running on for the rest of my natural life? Well, you can go to patreon.com/RTK. That's patreon.com/RTK. And you can pledge a little bit of money each month to help support this show financially. These people do it, have been doing it for months now. I cannot say thank you enough to the $20 group, Ty Declare, at Ty Declare 44 on Twitter, Andy Simpson, who, Andy, if you want me to ever give out your Twitter handle, just let me know. Randy Singh, at Randy_Singh_. Ray Hines, at Big Turf Guy. And Derek Vaughn, at D_Vaughn88. $10 group is Christine Roadlander, at C. Roadlander. And Todd Sullivan, at Tito Solovino. $5 group is Josh Beadle. I cannot say thank you enough to those people who support the show financially. And if you can't or don't want to support the show financially but want to support it in other ways, you can follow me on Twitter at JB Briscoe and shoot me your questions and takeaways before and after games. And share the show with your friends. Subscribe anywhere podcasts are consumed. Any way you can support this show is much appreciated. These people especially, supporting the show financially, I cannot say thank you to enough. Atlanta Falcons versus the Kansas City Chiefs. There's some pretty big news here that's happened in the last couple of days for the Chiefs. The biggest long-term thing is Jay Howard has been added to the injured reserve. So early in the season, the Chiefs lose defensive end Alan Bailey for the year. Now they lose Jay Howard for the year. Dontari Poe is having back spasms. The second-round pick, the first pick for the Chiefs, of Chris Jones in this draft seems incredibly fortunate right now because the defensive line that was a huge strength for the Chiefs at the beginning of the year is now being more and more depleted. So Jay Howard went to IR. Jeremy Maclin was initially questionable for this game against the Falcons, but on Saturday he was downgraded to out. So no Jeremy Maclin in this game once again. I believe this is his fifth consecutive game that he's missed. And Craig Stout a couple days ago at Barley Hop on Twitter had a stat that sort of summarized some of the things I've been saying about Jeremy Maclin lately. And he said, here's Jeremy Maclin's impact with the Chiefs. These are differences in statistics with and without Jeremy Maclin. Without Jeremy Maclin, the Chiefs have almost 83 fewer yards per game, 27 fewer rushing yards per game, 56 fewer passing yards per game, a 17.3% third down completion lesser percentage. They have gotten 17% worse at converting third downs and have lost over almost 3.5 minutes time of possession per game without Jeremy Maclin. Maclin was not very effective with the Chiefs whenever he was healthy this year. I covered this a couple shows ago, but it's obvious to the eye and to the statistics the impact that Jeremy Maclin has had. And you can argue, was that really Jeremy Maclin there? Are there other things going on? Well, that's including a Nick Foles game, but it was also a missed Jeremy Maclin game. It's including Alex Smith's non-concussion head injury, his ear laceration. Maybe Alex Smith's a little more jumpy. There are other factors involved, but especially if you just watch Alex Smith, he is such a more confident quarterback whenever Jeremy Maclin is around, and that's my biggest concern for not having Jeremy Maclin on this roster. It's not because of his actual statistical contributions. It's the contributions he has to the offense that aren't showing up in the stat sheets. And this is going to be true for a lot of guys who are questionable for this game. These Chiefs are questionable for Sunday versus the Falcons. Dontari Poe, Dee Ford, Kendall Reyes, Phillip Gaines, who was added to the list on Saturday, Justin Houston. Those guys are all questionable for the game. Steven Nelson, though, was a full participant at practice all week and doesn't have a designation, so he should be good to go for Sunday. Also on Saturday, the Chiefs made another move. They added defensive lineman T.J. Barnes from the practice squad to the active roster. With Poe and Reyes both being questionable, this move makes a lot of sense. This also, I think, was the first roster move they made after putting Jay Howard on IR. So I don't know exactly what that means yet. I don't know if they don't expect Poe to play. He didn't practice all week with his back injury. I don't know if they don't expect Reyes to play, or if they simply needed to add another defensive line body after putting Jay Howard on the injured reserve. But T.J. Barnes is the newest guy. And somebody tweeted that he's the biggest dude in the locker room now for the Chiefs. He's around 350 pounds. So his presence could be really interesting. And young guys have been stepping in really well for the defensive line. But if Poe is out in this game, the Chiefs would be starting a completely different defensive line than they had planned on coming into this season. Bailey to IR early in the year. Howard just went to IR. Poe could be out. So now it's Chris Jones, Raheem Nunez-Rochez, Kendall Reyes, and maybe T.J. Barnes rotating through the defensive line. This was a strength coming in this year, as I said earlier. Now it's a concern, but the backups have stepped up big time lately. Nunez-Rochez has had some very nice plays. Chris Jones has been an animal. Kendall Reyes has played very well. Hopefully there's a system thing going on here where Bob Sutton feels like he can plug just about anybody in. I don't think that's actually true, because the Chiefs have spent money on Jay Howard, Alan Bailey, Dontari Poe, a draft pick on Chris Jones. I think the Chiefs understand the value of having talented defensive linemen. I think it's one of the things that Bob Sutton doesn't ever try to cover up for. He says, let me invest in the defensive line. The rest of the things will take care of themselves. In this case, the Chiefs don't have a choice. The Chiefs are having to deal with backups going into these starting roles. And it's not a great week for the Chiefs to have to deal with this, because the offense they're about to face is a little terrifying. And I'll say that with Matt Ryan and Julio Jones, obviously, here, I think this is the best duo that the Chiefs have faced since the Steelers before the bye week. And again, the bye week being as early as it was, I think, was detrimental to the Chiefs, especially now as we're talking about, you know, Dee Ford's injuries and Marcus Peters being banged up. Obviously, Jeremy Maclin being up for several weeks now. I think a later bye week would have been good. But at the same time, looking at what the Chiefs did now since week four, since week five during their bye week, there was kind of a second season in my mind. The 2-2 record before, and then what they've been since then, only losing to the Buccaneers. But since that Steelers game, other than the game against Pittsburgh, I think this is the best duo the Chiefs have faced all year. And Devonta Freeman is no slouch in the backfield either. The good news, though, is that against one of the hottest duos in football, against 2016's most high-flying passing attack, the Chiefs have done really, really well against other top duos aside from Roethlisberger and Brown back in week four. Here's just strictly with points. I'm just giving you points right now, because we all know the Chiefs' defense has struggled to get off the field on third down most of the time. They were much better at it with Justin Houston last week in Denver, and they've given up a ton of yards. but strictly working with points here. Here's what the Chiefs have done working backwards, back to the bye week. Against Jameis Winston and Mike Evans, they gave up 19 points. Cam Newton and Kelvin Benjamin, 17 points. Andrew Luck and T.Y. Hilton, 14 points. And not just for those two guys, but for the whole offense, spearheaded by those two guys. Blake Bortles and Allen Robinson or Allen Hurns, yes, it's a reach, but I'm still counting it, 14 points. Drew Brees and Brandon Cooks, 21 points. Derek Carr and Amari Cooper, not to mention Michael Crabtree, 10 points. The Chiefs' defense has been really, really, really good when it's had Dee Ford or Justin Houston this year. And on Sunday, we're going to see both of them, unless something has gone awry. I think we should see both of them relatively healthy. Marcus Peters is officially in shutdown corner mode. Julio Jones will be purposefully lined up against Gaines or Nelson very frequently to try to get him off of Marcus Peters, I think. And I think, as has been the case since the bye week, the defense is going to do as well as can be expected in this game. Going over to the Falcons for a second, looking at what they've done lately, working backwards, last week they beat the Cardinals 38-19, 38 points against a defense with some talent, but the Cardinals have struggled this year and allowed only 19 points. But they lost to the Eagles in Philadelphia the week before, 24-15, so scored only 15 points in Philly. Week before, 43 points against the Buccaneers in Tampa, which, my goodness, that's a big discrepancy. The Chiefs scored 17 against the Buccaneers at home. The Falcons went to Tampa Bay and scored 43. Before that, they beat the Packers 33-32. Before that, lost to the Chargers 33-30. Lost in Seattle 26-24. The week before that, won in Denver 23-16. So as is the case with the entire NFL at this point, there are some up and downs for this team. And if you want to focus in on those last 4 weeks, 33 against the Packers, 43 against the Buccaneers, 38 against the Cardinals, and 15 against the Eagles, the odds aren't great the Chiefs catch them on a down day. What I think they can do is try to take some cues from Philadelphia as to how they stopped the Falcons. In games where Devonta Freeman has struggled, the Falcons have actually also struggled, even though he's not in any way the highlight of this offense. And in this game, Devonta Freeman had 12 carries for 49 yards whenever they scored only 15 points against the Eagles. Matt Ryan had 33 attempts, but only completed 18 of his passes. 267 yards, one touchdown, and one interception. One thing that I think the Eagles did very well in this game, on the other side of the ball, to force the Falcons into a box, Ryan Matthews had 19 carries for 109 yards and two touchdowns. The Chiefs need to move the ball on the ground, maybe in this game more than any other game so far. They have beaten high-flying offenses without running the ball successfully this year, but I don't want to risk that anymore. Wendell Smallwood in this game also got 13 carries for 70 yards. Overall, the Eagles ran 38 times for over 200 yards. The way you keep the Falcons from scoring more than 15 points is by not giving Matt Ryan and Julio Jones the ball. And for the Chiefs, that might mean 15 carries for Spencer Ware and 10 screens throughout the game, 10 short passes that effectively work as running plays. But those have to work. Those have to be effective. The Chiefs cannot struggle to complete those short passes or to have those short passes only go for 2 or 3 yards at a time, because then they're going to have to really push the ball. And if I'm going to pick a team in this game to push the ball successfully, it is not the Chiefs. I am not happy about the Chiefs in that game. So what do the Chiefs do here? I think it's as simple to start off, as simple as feeding Spencer Ware and then getting the ball back to your stars again. If Tyreek Hill gets a screen and ends up taking it for a touchdown, I will not be complaining about them scoring too fast. But you have to set the pace, wear down the Falcons' defense. The Falcons' defense is no good. Wear down the Falcons' defense. Make them tired while your defense is resting. While the Chiefs are resting up, while Dee Ford and Justin Houston are getting a break, you should be grinding down the Falcons' defense just with Spencer Ware after Spencer Ware after Spencer Ware carry. I think that's how you do it here. And then, yes, you will have to make some big plays. You will have to have some nice crossing routes to Travis Kelce. You will have to get the ball to Tyreek Hill. All of those things have to happen. I think will happen because those are the stars on this team right now. Those are the only guys I think Alex Smith really has any reason to trust right now. Keep the ball away from Albert Wilson, please. But you grind it out with Spencer Ware. And don't give the ball back to Matt Ryan. Don't give them a chance to make you look bad. And give your defense a chance to catch a breather. On the defensive side of the ball, I think the pass rush is going to be really tough for Matt Ryan to deal with. I think the run defense is going to do a fine job with Freeman and Tevin Coleman as well. I think the run defense should be fine, but they've got to get off the field on third downs. If this game becomes another instance of, all right, 3rd and 12 and 14-yard pass to Julio Jones, then the Chiefs might as well have stayed home. They cannot be allowing those kinds of completions again. And that this has happened so many times against so many teams, plenty of teams worse than the Falcons. So it's not super encouraging. And if you have to give Steven Nelson help with Julio Jones, Marcus Peters can handle Mohamed Sanu or whatever. But as more options start to come out there, Austin Hooper, their main tight end, he's Austin Hooper. I don't have any frame of reference for Austin Hooper. But it's guys like that that you have to be aware of against this Chiefs pass defense because it does start to get pretty shallow pretty quickly. And I was talking about this on Twitter a few days ago. The Chiefs knew that their secondary was going to be a little bit tumultuous because they drafted Kavari Russell with their second pick in the draft, but he didn't make the roster. He didn't get a regular season snap. They just invested incredibly poorly there. And we still don't know that story. We probably never will fully know that story. But the Chiefs knew this is going to be a struggle, and it is here. They have to deal with all of the weapons. I think they'll do that fine as long as they can deal with those weapons when it comes to third down. I don't think the Falcons are just going to throw bomb after bomb and just bury the Chiefs by halftime. I don't think it's going to happen. I think it's going to be a game where both teams are hanging close here. But the Chiefs cannot lose the third down battle as badly as they've lost it most of the last few weeks. It's simply not an option against an offense this good whenever the Chiefs' offense is currently so hard-pressed for points. Over on Twitter, at JB Briscoe, I asked you yesterday, what are you concerned about for this game? What do you want to talk about? What questions do you have? What do you want to know about this game? And you guys responded very, very well. First of all, from Cody Tapp, who works at Sports Radio 810, we work together pretty often, said, do you feel like Joshua is more formal? And I do. I do feel like it's more formal. I also think it's more familial. My family calls me Joshua usually. My friends call me Josh. It's kind of how it works. Thank you, Cody. From Rodney Green, at G_Rod913, said, I'm worried about how long Peters will contain Jones and if others step up and cover Sanu. Also, if you can establish the run game early. I'm there for you step for step on the run game. That might be my biggest concern right now. Is that will Reed be willing to try to establish the run game early, and then will the offensive line be able to hold up? The offensive line's done pretty well in pass protection, especially Mitchell Schwartz and Eric Fisher, and against the Broncos was really, really tough. Von Miller was a tornado. But beyond that, beyond having to deal with Von Miller, overall, Fisher and Schwartz have done a nice job in pass protection, but the run game has struggled this year. That's been kind of a sneakily undercovered story, I think, for this Chiefs offense. The run game just hasn't been as good this season, and it's not because they lost Jamal Charles. They didn't have Jamal Charles last year either. It's been worse this year than it was last year. So that's a huge question for me also, and I don't know the answer to it right now. I'm currently a little bit skeptical. I think it's actually smart to be worried about how long Peters can contain Julio. I think that's a very smart concern. Because Peters can deal with Jones for a period of time every play. The offense always has the advantage, but Marcus Peters is very, very good at it, and I think Peters is going to try to let it look like Matt Ryan has enough of a window to get the ball to Jones a few times when he actually does it. I wouldn't be surprised at all to see Peters trying to actively bait Matt Ryan in this game, and that means occasionally that backfires. That concerns me. But I'm not actually concerned about kind of the 4 seconds into a play kind of coverage that gets very, very challenging for any corner because of the guys who are going to be rushing Matt Ryan. Because I think Dee Ford and Justin Houston are going to be getting to Matt Ryan with some consistency, hopefully enough pressure from the defensive line as well. As long as those guys are used smartly, I think they're going to get enough pressure on Ryan to keep Marcus Peters safe, I guess, in trying to cover Julio. I have my meagerest concerns about Mohamed Sanu. Emmanuel Sanders was difficult in Denver. The Demaryius Thomas Marcus Peters matchup was a total victory for Marcus Peters. That second guy does matter. I think we saw a few of the worst plays of Philip Gaines' career all in a row. I have more concerns about Gaines than I did a few weeks ago. He's really plateaued this year, these last several games, but I'm not completely selling my stock on him. I'm still inclined to think that he's the second best corner on this team, which isn't a huge compliment. I think he and Steven Nelson all have big gaps in their game. DJ White also, though, might be justifying some more playing time. And as we've seen Kenneth Acker get on the field a lot, I don't think Bob Sutton is afraid to be rotating those guys. And so if Mohamed Sanu is a terrible matchup for Philip Gaines, but DJ White can run with him, then I think we're going to see DJ White out there. I'm not horrified of that number two wide receiver matchup just yet. I might eat my words on that, though, come Sunday. From Sean Dixon at SeanDixon58. Said Philip Gaines versus Julio Jones and Alex Smith not being able to take advantage of this pass defense. I think I covered early on the deal with Smith being able to take advantage of the pass defense. It's not just about Alex Smith taking advantage of it. It's about Alex Smith and Andy Reid agreeing to take advantage of it. And that's still my secondary concern for this offense right now, because I think to win this game, even if you're taking advantage of a bad pass defense, The Falcons are going to be creating points of their own. The Chiefs definitely have the better defense in this matchup. The Falcons definitely have the better offense. Seeing which one bends first, I think that's why I would put my chips on the control the ball strategy for the offense, on that philosophy for the Chiefs, because it just gives the Falcons less time to do what they're good at. I would rather have their best unit off the field as much as possible, and that's clearly their offense at this point. I guess you want the other team's defense on the field. That was a silly way to put it. I want to keep the Falcons' offense off the field. Let's just stick with that. But if the Chiefs are successfully doing that, if the run game is wearing down the defense, then their bad passing defense is going to get even worse. And then Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce are going to start getting open more and more. And then I do want to see Reed and Smith taking advantage of that. What I don't want to see is them trying to take advantage of it with 3- and 4-yard pass plays, because every defense can deal with that, and that's not effective enough. I want to see them either running the ball or having some of that aggressiveness, and most importantly, even in this game, having a little bit of a sense of urgency right out of the gate, because you do want to eat up the play clock. You do want to eat up the game against the Falcons, but if you're eating up the play clock and then punting after 3 really long plays, then this isn't going anywhere for you. You're going to have to actually turn those plays, those long drives, into actual points. So that does concern me still a little bit. And Gaines versus Julio is a concern. Again, I think that's a concern with whoever's opposite Marcus Peters. I think I have a ton of faith in Peters and not much in anybody else in that cornerback group. It's a concern. What do you do other than give that guy a safety help, though? I'm pretty confident in giving Marcus Peters one-on-one responsibilities. He's shown that he can deal with that as well as anybody we've seen in Kansas City in a long, long time. So you've got to let Ron Parker be ready to go help wherever Julio Jones is, or to be able to go help wherever Steven Nelson is matched up one-on-one, or Philip Gaines is matched up one-on-one, or DJ White is matched up one-on-one. Hopefully Kenneth Acker stays off the field, though. From Andy Nielsen, at Andy Nielsen, he said he's worried about all of that quote-unquote crowd noise. If you're not familiar, the Falcons were docked a 5th-round pick, I believe, in the 2016 draft, and fined, there we go, $350,000, and forfeited a 5th-round pick in the 2016 draft for pumping in fake crowd noise. So I think the Falcons should be on their best behavior there. What a weird story, though. From Keyshawn Brown, a few good ones in a row. So can Conley please get a couple of deep looks this week? Man, last week, I don't think Chris Conley got any looks until the fourth quarter, maybe even towards that last drive. He was not getting any looks at all, and I don't know if that's because defenses are just aware of him and saying, you know, just make sure you're covering him, which is, you know, a good strategy, and Alex Smith's not interested. If Chris Conley's having a really, really, really hard time getting acclimated to this offense, Tyreek Hill is a rookie. He became a huge part of this offense 8 games into his career. Chris Conley is a season and a half in and not getting any targets. And this is with Jeremy Maclin out. One thing that's interesting, I think, with how the Conley thing has worked lately is it's very obvious that Albert Wilson is starting in the place of Jeremy Maclin. Albert Wilson is at least starting off getting Maclin snaps. And so Conley's role, I don't think, really has changed much. from whenever Macklin was healthy. I would like to see it grow a little bit, but I'm starting to get to the point where I'm really questioning what is Chris Conley good for? What do the Chiefs expect from him? He has the physical tools to be a number one receiver, certainly a number two receiver with the Chiefs' current offense, the number three guy, maybe the number four pass catcher. If you say that the most important pass catchers on this team are Kelce, Hill, and Macklin, then Chris Conley totally deserves that fourth spot. He should at least be that good. Right now, he's not even close. He's been a total ghost here. And I'm not sure if I want to give him deep looks this week. He doesn't get open the kind of way that Tyreek Hill does. Hill can get separation and control his body and control his hands in a way that I've rarely ever seen from a guy that small and that fast. There's an Antonio Brown about him. There's an Emmanuel Sanders about him. A DeSean Jackson quality about him. That makes me want to send Tyreek Hill deep. What I want to see Chris Conley do is get those slants across the middle for 8 yards that pick up the first downs on 2nd and 7. That's what I want to see Chris Conley. I want to see Chris Conley being utilized with his big frame in those mid-level situations. That's what I'm concerned about. From Eddie Eames, I think it actually. I think those are two I's. Whoops. At Eddie Eames. Eddie I. Ames. I'm sorry. There are too many vowels in a row. You have four vowels in a row. Five vowels in a row. I can't even count them. There are so many. How do I deal with five vowels in a row on a Twitter handle? That's just too much. So his concern is, did the anemic offense get its iron? Listen, I like the connection from anemic and then, you know, the blood disease. If there is going to be any iron in this game, I think it's going to come from Spencer Ware, and I'm concerned about Andy Reid's ability to embrace that. And Spencer Ware and the pacing. Spencer Ware and the pacing are the two things that I am most adamant about and that I'm most concerned about. From Keyshawn Brown again, at ChiefPriest_25. Will this offense have a Colts performance against the Atlanta defense? I'd like to say that, but I don't really think it's actually about the defense that much. Because, and again, with overtime and with a crazy thing at the end, the Chiefs offense scored 30 points, their highest totals in two games, tied it for at the Colts and then at the Broncos. I mean, the Broncos have probably the best defense in football, even after watching the Chiefs for all these weeks. I'm sorry, their highest scoring game was in week one against the Chargers. Since then, it was the Colts and the Broncos were second. They're tied. Those are three times they've broken 30 points. I don't know if I really see them breaking 30 points here. They probably have to, but the thing I haven't seen is an offense that actually looks good without Jeremy Maclin, except for that last drive against the Broncos. I think the Chiefs' best chance here is to win this game 24-20, and if they can do that, then I think this is a very competitive game that is constantly on the verge of breaking in favor of Atlanta because they have bigger big play potential than the Chiefs do by a long shot. I think it's a very anxious game if that's how it goes, but I'm more interested in that than I am of a 35-32 kind of victory that just I don't think the Chiefs can hold up through. Also from Keyshawn, will the return of Mack, an emergence of Hill, and Kelce catching open up the run game on Atlanta? I would love that to be true. Since he sent that question, Macklin's been ruled out, but I do think that defenses now have to account for Tyreek Hill. I think that's a good point. And Travis Kelce has already been targeted by defenses for, if not weeks, years now. But he actually has to catch the passes, which has been a surprising struggle for most of his career, especially these last couple of weeks. I think having to deal with Tyreek Hill is great for the Chiefs' offense because defenses are afraid of him. I would love for that to open up the run game. I would love to see sometimes, whenever it is, Conley and Hill going deep downfield and trying to open up the run game a little bit. But I have my doubts still. From Ryan Miller at KC Royal 5280, Julio Jones versus whoever. I could see him finishing with 160 yards and two touchdowns or something crazy, plus stopping the Falcons' run game. Dealing with the Chiefs' run defense has been kind of weird all year because I feel like every week we have some flashes, usually the beginning of the game, of like, oh no, Mark Ingram just picked up 40 yards on that drive. Are they going to be able to stop him all day? Or, oh no, it's Frank Gore busting through a hole, and then it always sort of stops being a story. So I'm going to give Derek Johnson, who, by the way, not on the injury report for the first time in a while this week, Derek Johnson might be actually healthy. I'm giving the benefit of the doubt to Derek Johnson and Bob Sutton and Justin Houston and anybody and Eric Berry to hold down Devonta Freeman. That's not my biggest concern right now by any means. It's something that obviously could be a problem, but I think the Chiefs will handle it if I have to bet my life on it. Dealing with Julio Jones is going to be a problem. The luxury, though, you have of saying, like, Marcus Peters, you can deal with anybody one-on-one. We're going to just trust you with that. Then you can basically give safety help to wherever Julio Jones is, or you can give safety help to your weakest cover guy. If you need to help out Steven Nelson in the slot because he's lined up against some random tight end, if you're more concerned about that than you are Philip Gaines versus than you are concerned about Philip Gaines versus Julio Jones, then maybe Gaines is still dealing with Jones kind of by himself. But I expect to see a defense that is designed to give those younger guys, those non-Marcus Peters corners, more help with Julio Jones. Also, one other thing from Sean Dixon after I tweeted about Jeremy Maclin being out that I haven't talked about yet is the idea that maybe they're saving him for Oakland. I think that if Jeremy Maclin was healthy, he'd be playing in this game because I do think this game is important. The Chiefs can't lose against Tampa Bay and against the Falcons and still win the AFC West. I have a really hard time seeing that play out. We'll talk about the AFC West here in just a minute, so I'll break it down. But right now, with where the Chiefs set in the AFC West and in the league overall, being 8-3, if you drop to 8-4 against the Falcons, you've got to beat the Raiders at home to get to 9-4. Then the Titans at home to 10-4, Broncos at home 11-4, at the Chargers 12-4. That's what it's going to take to win the division, and that can be done, but it gives you no wiggle room from here on out. If you beat the Falcons, you still have to win against the Raiders and the Broncos, and probably against the Chargers. But if the Titans and Marcus Mariota come in and give you a real scare after a tough Thursday night game against the Raiders, then the season doesn't end there. The Chiefs can lose to the Falcons as long as they take care of business the rest of the season. But I have my concerns, and I would certainly rather them win this game. And I think the Chiefs understand that also. If Jeremy Maclin could play in this game, I think he would be playing in this game. Now for the prediction. I'm not thrilled about it. It bums me out, and I have a hard time finalizing a score prediction for this game because I think very highly of the Chiefs' defense and very highly of the Falcons' offense, and I feel very insecure about the Chiefs' offense, and I don't think very highly at all about the Falcons' defense. So having kind of strengths and having strengths lined up against strengths in this game does really confuse me, frankly. Because I want to pick the Chiefs defense that I've seen, but I also want to pick the Falcons offense that I've seen. And right now, even though maybe I shouldn't be, maybe this would be different with Jeremy Maclin, I'm a little bit more concerned about the Chiefs offense than I am the Falcons defense. So I think while the Chiefs defense and Falcons offense are basically even matched strengths, I'm going to say that right now Andy Reid has shown me too little to have much faith in what the offense can do right now. And that bums me out, even though the Falcons just, scored 15 points against the Eagles a couple of weeks ago. I'll say the Falcons win this game with a nice performance by the defense still, 24-20, in a close, close game where the defense, I think, does its job. I would take 24 points in Atlanta in the modern NFL. I think that's totally reasonable to say, offense, you've got to go score 25. And if the offense is moving the ball well, the defense will be on the field less. If the Chiefs win this game, they could absolutely win it with just the inverted score. But I'll say the Falcons win this game 24-20 in Atlanta, and the Chiefs really have to look at running the board from here on out. As the playoff picture starts to get a little bit clearer, I want to look around the AFC West and see what else is going on here and what the Chiefs can be expecting, what the Chiefs can be realizing that they need to do to stay in the game here in the division, which I think they absolutely will. But I think it's more important than ever now what else is happening on the league. So the Chiefs are going to Atlanta, I think the toughest matchup of the week in the AFC West. But the Broncos are going to Jacksonville, and Trevor Siemian, the quarterback, has been ruled out. Paxton Lynch will get the start versus the Jags. I think their defense does plenty to ruin Blake Bortles' day, but it's not a total pushover game, especially if you have no faith in Paxton Lynch and if the Jags can stop the run. I think the Broncos win that game, but it's something to keep an eye on for sure to see if the Broncos are now the team in the AFC West closest to falling out of the division and even the playoff conversation. Other than, of course, the San Diego Chargers, who are, I think, still a really above-average football team, but don't have a chance in the AFC West anymore. They have the Buccaneers at home. I think the Chargers take care of business there, but it won't be enough. The most interesting game is the Bills at the Raiders. The Bills have played some pretty nice football. If this game was in Buffalo, I would feel really good about the chances of Oakland dropping this game. But since it's not, I think the Raiders win in Oakland against Buffalo and move to 10-2. And this is why I think the Chiefs can't afford to lose this game against the Falcons, even though I actually think they will. Let's say the Chiefs do win at home on Thursday night, which I've been saying for a long time. Then the Raiders are 10-3. Then they go to the Chargers. You're depending on the Chargers to take care of business. That's an average bet. I think the Raiders win there. Then it's the Colts at home. I think the Raiders win that one. Then they go to Denver. Well, then if you're saying that the Raiders lose at Kansas City and at Denver to end the season, then they're 12-4. If that's how that plays out, allow me to do some very simple math that I think should make Chiefs fans very excited. Even if the Chiefs lose in Atlanta, they can lose one more non-divisional game. If the Chiefs lose in Atlanta but then win the rest of their games, then they are 12-4 with two victories over the Raiders. Beating the Falcons would give the Chiefs a huge leg up in the matchups from here on out. They wouldn't have to depend on anybody else. If the Chiefs just win out, if they beat the Falcons, if they beat the Raiders, the Titans, the Broncos, and the Chargers, if they win those games, they win the AFC West, and they win a first-round bye. They would be the 2 seed, I believe, right now. And not to mention, around the rest of the AFC, the New England Patriots have lost their best player, I think, other than Tom Brady. Maybe their most important player, though. Rob Gronkowski has been put on the injured reserve. He's out for the season after having back surgery. The Patriots are more vulnerable than they've ever been. There are some options here. The Patriots are currently 9-2. So you're listening saying, are you telling me there's a chance? Yeah. If the Chiefs beat the Falcons and win out, and the Chiefs go 13-3, who do the Patriots lose to? Let's look at their schedule. Rams, not going to happen. Ravens, not going to happen. At Broncos versus Jets, not going to happen. At Dolphins? Dolphins fighting for a playoff spot? If the Broncos pull it off at home against the Patriots, then we're getting into some funky tiebreakers that I don't actually know how those would go yet because they're obviously not in the same division. It's really, really interesting. And if nothing else, if the Chiefs ended up with a bye week and a 2 seed, and then you're dealing with, what, the Titans at home, the Steelers at home, anybody but the Raiders at home probably, dealing with somebody other than the Patriots coming to Arrowhead to go to the AFC Championship game and take on the Patriots in New England, man, what? How much fun would that be? If the Chiefs lose this game against the Falcons, then they're depending on the Raiders dropping one more game somewhere else and betting on the, kind of giving up on the number one overall seed, I would say. But man, it's really exciting. And it's also funny that after the Buccaneers game, I was getting tweets about what are the odds that the Chiefs lose from here on out? Let's look at what they did in Denver. What are the odds they win on out from here? What are the odds that they clean the table? Run the table. Why did I say clean the table? That's not a real thing. What are the odds they run the table? Got a chance to win in Atlanta. I think they do beat the Raiders at home. I think they do beat the Titans at home. I think they do beat the Broncos at home. I think they do win in San Diego. They win every game except for the Falcons game. They're definitely a wild card team. That's like a lock. But if they can win in Atlanta, or if the Raiders can find a place to lose, if the Raiders could take a loss against the Bills at home this week, or if the Raiders could go to Denver in week 17 and cough one up, or if they could, after losing to the Chiefs on Thursday Night Football, go to San Diego and lose, or lose at home to the Colts. The Raiders have a tough schedule. Raiders drop one of those, then this Sunday is not such a big deal. It's crazy, man, because I think that this Chiefs offense right now is going to keep them from an AFC Championship game. Like, I think if this offense was average, if this offense gets average, they're probably an AFC Championship game team with a first-round bye. I genuinely think that's probably how this goes. If the offense plays really well, if we get the offense we saw at the end of the Chargers game, the end of the Broncos game, throughout the Colts game, this Chiefs team is, at worst, I think the second-best team in the AFC. Maybe the best team in the AFC. I'm like, man, I don't want to see the Chiefs lose in a Super Bowl, but if they got there and they got whipped up by the Cowboys or the Seahawks or something, I would go ahead and take that season as an overall nice experience. And I genuinely think that's a possibility. but it's not going to happen until Andy Reid can be a little bit more aggressive moving the ball on offense. I'll tell you what, sometimes during the off season, doing these shows on a weekly basis is really hard. Sometimes even after games that go more poorly, after the Steelers game, after the Texans game, doing the show can be kind of hard. I have been having so much fun, especially these last two episodes, doing this podcast. Thank you so much for listening. I hope it's evident that I'm having fun doing this show. This is the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast on Blog Talk Radio and ArrowheadAct.com. You can contact me on Twitter at JB Briscoe, Facebook.com/RTK Show, comments on Arrowhead Addict. I want to be as accessible to you as possible. I want to know what you think about the show, about the Chiefs, about where the show should go, about where the Chiefs should go. Anything you've got, I want to hear it. I'll be opening up my Twitter timeline at the end of the game against the Falcons, asking for your takes and takeaways over at Twitter.com/JB Briscoe. Until then, I think we have a chance to see the Chiefs really determine how serious they are in the AFC by going to Atlanta and not putting up a goose egg. I'm a little bit optimistic, which is weird. Bye, Mom.